It's over. Game over, man.
It's time for the Chicago Blackhawks postgame show.
Give me the postgame.
On the Blackhawks Radio Network, here's Charlie Remigliotis.
Welcome into the Blackhawks postgame show. Charlie Remigliotis here, helping you break down a 3-2 loss to the Minnesota Wild, despite the Blackhawks leading 2-0 in this hockey game. You can call or text 312-981-7200 to chime in on the post-game show. We're going to go up to 4:30 today. Let's go back to XL Energy Center and bring in Troy Murray for a game recap. Troy, I think we can know exactly where we can pinpoint where things kind of turn for the Minnesota, or for the Blackhawks. Minnesota scoring that first goal on the Chicago turnover in the second period.
You're in a position where you're up 2-0. You're playing well. You're doing what you need to do on the road. You scored first early in the first period. Donato 2:23 into it. You quiet the crowd. You've gone along, and you've done all the right things. And you increase your lead in the second period. Halfway through that second period, with the 2-0 lead, you've got to play in the offensive zone. And rather than making the smart play, and the play that should be made 98% of the time, unless you're really trying to force something and you're behind a goal, but the play's got to go down the boards in the offensive zone. And trying to force a pass from the left wing side to the right point gets picked off. Minnesota comes back with numbers, and they end up scoring their first goal of the game. And then 15 seconds later, kind of a little bit of a lucky break. But once they scored that first goal, the energy was in their game. And the energy in the energy XL Energy Center certainly increased. There was nothing for them to get excited about up until this point. So now all of a sudden, now you're on your heels. And a long one goes in that Peter Mrazek would love to have back. That's his first mistake that I can remember in a long, long time. Certainly this year that he wanted that one back. It was just a long shot from Spurgeon that he thought he caught, but just kind of nicked his glove and went into the net. So all of a sudden, you know, a 2-0 lead evaporates, and it's a 3-2 deficit, and you just couldn't find a way to get the job done in the third period. Minnesota 11-0 going into the third period when holding the lead. You know, frustrating, because I thought you did a lot of good things for the first half of the game, and then you started to chase it.
It's unfortunate, too, how quickly it snowballed, because it kind of, you know, I was saying in the second intermission, it kind of resembled the Philly game where the Hawks take a 2-0 lead last Saturday against the Flyers through two periods. It was a really quiet building in Philadelphia, not much to cheer for. The fans were even booing them after a power play. And then Philadelphia gets that next goal to make it 2-1. And the building totally livens up, and they end up getting the second one and then eventually win in overtime because they fed off the crowd energy. It felt very similar in this game where Minnesota didn't have much to cheer about until that first goal. And when they do get that first goal, it just snowballed the other way for Chicago.
How important was it for the Blackhawks against Dallas to get off to that early lead, get the crowd into it, and the crowd was energized through the entire 60 minutes? You know, the Hawks fed off that. The crowd fed off the Hawks. I mean, it works both ways, and especially when you're on the road. You know, if you can keep the hometown team off the scoreboard, if you can keep the building quiet, it certainly takes a lot of emotion away from the home team, and they weren't able to do that. That one little costly mistake turned into emotion and energy for the Minnesota Wild 15 seconds later. And you got to have a real good shift. Now, you know, if you're on the road or if you're at home and you give up a goal like that, the next shift, you really have to have a focus to take away that momentum and at least not let it build up any further than it was. And the Hawks not able to do that 15 seconds later. It's a tie hockey game. And then the whole everything changes. I mean, the emotion in the building, the energy, the way the Wild were playing with more confidence after that, you know, Hawks on their heels a little bit, trying to avoid some disaster. But that's what happens. I mean, that's the game of hockey. It goes in cycles, and if you give up the emotion to the other team, you know, you're going to have times where you're going to have to play well and weather the storm, so to speak. But when you turn things over like this and Minnesota, you might have got away with it if it wasn't for the top line being on the ice for the Wild. And that's another thing that you have to recognize. Who you're playing against? What line matchup is on the ice right there? If you've got the top players in the NHL and they're on the ice, the last thing you want to do is force something and turn it over. And that's what the Hawks did, and it really, in my mind, came back to haunt them. Yeah, there was mistakes that were made and other things, but that's kind of where the turning point was, and it was easy to pick out.
It didn't feel like the Blackhawks gave up a ton of high-quality scoring chances either, so it was more of a kind of a low-event hockey game, and you feel like it might have benefited Chicago from the standpoint that Minnesota is a very good defensive hockey team, and so you knew that if the Hawks were going to win this game, it probably wasn't going to be a 5-4 game. It was going to be more lower scoring, and so it was just a huge missed opportunity where you find yourselves up 2-0 against a very good defensive team in Minnesota and just can't shut the door.
You have to realize where you are, what the score is, what the situation is, and that's just alertness on the bench. That's being aware of who you're playing against, what the opposition is like. And this is a real good team. But, for Minnesota, if you hold on to the lead, if you're up 2-0, Minnesota at some point is going to have to, take chances. They're going to have to try and get back into the game because they're chasing it. You can't give them that opportunity to get back in. You have to let them earn it, and if they do, good for them, tip your hat to them and say well done, but you can't give them that opportunity. And that was the big difference. I mean, Minnesota, if you could force them into a position where now they've got to try and create the offense, and they're a good team offensively as well. I mean, I think they're in the top third, over 3 goals per game, and you just don't want to turn the game around on a mental mistake. And when you're on the road, you can't get that emotion back because the fans are not going to be on your side, that's for sure. So you just got to be smart and talk about the smart road game and making it a dull game in some ways. And sometimes it's not pretty, but you got to find ways to win on the road in different areas. You won the special teams matchup in this game tonight. You scored one power play goal on the 3 opportunities. You would like to have maybe increase that with some other power play goals when you had those chances before Minnesota had any power play chances, and you knew at some point they were going to get one. And I think it's just frustrating for the guys that, coming off that big win and then being in a position here where you're up 2-0 and then turning the game around on a mistake.
What did you think of Connor Bedard today? It definitely looked like he started to look more like himself, had 7 shot attempts and 4 shots on goal today.
I thought he was really good, and at times he completely dominated in the offensive zone, and that's a confidence that I don't think we've seen from him as of late. It just seemed like, because he wasn't scoring, he gets that goal last game, and he comes into this one refreshed. Boy, I thought that he had some really special moments in this game, just dominating. And when you look at his time on ice, it was over 21 minutes in this game. And then you look down at Kaprizov, who was one of the top players in the NHL this season, over 25 and a half minutes in this game. For a forward, that is incredible. That was more than anybody else on the Minnesota Wild by quite a bit. That's incredible for a forward to dominate ice time like that. Maybe the bad thing is when you look at it, his average shift length was 1:16, and that's too long to be out on the ice. But I really did like the way that Bedard played in this game. He was active. You could see that when he got the puck, he was playing with a lot of confidence. He made some great plays individually. The 4 shots on goal, I thought that he really had a focus on getting those shots through, and Fleury had to fight off a couple of the shots that he got in from inside the top of the faceoff circle. He can let it go there, and if you're a goaltender, it gets in on you so quick. So if you're not in great position, and if it doesn't hit you, it's probably going in.
So one of my big takeaways of today is how I like sitting in this seat and not yours, because you make it seem very easy being the color guy. I had to fill in your shoes for the last 2 games, and boy, I am no Troy Murray, that's for sure.
Well, I didn't get to hear the game in Philadelphia, and I was doing TV the other night, so I didn't get to hear you the other night as well. So I know you did a great job just talking to people, and thank you for filling in and doing that wonderful job. I'm not a play-by-play guy. I found that out in Seattle for my 2.5 minutes. So you might not be a color guy, but I'm not a playoff, a play-by-play guy. So let's just stay where we are for a while.
I was going to say, we all know our roles here. Let's just keep our roles where we are.
Let's keep everything in order.
All right, Troy, safe travels back home. We'll talk to you back in Chicago.
All right, sounds good.
All right, that was the great Troy Murray helping us break this one down. Again, tough loss. This was the sixth game in a row where the Blackhawks scored the first goal of the hockey game. And in those six games, the Hawks are 2-4-0, unfortunately. And I was kind of quickly researching this right before we went on for the postgame show. The first five times the Blackhawks scored the first goal of the season, they were 5-0. So since that stretch of being 5-0 when scoring first, the Hawks are 2-4-0. So an unfortunate trend there. And the crazy thing about that is it's the third game in a row where the Hawks held a 2-0 lead at some point in the hockey game. And unfortunately, they've blown two of those three. So a difficult, it's a frustrating trend for the Blackhawks, because you look and if they did seal the deal against Philadelphia on Saturday, and they did seal the deal today, we could be looking at a four-game win streak. I'm not sure if the feeling, sometimes I caution saying that, because who knows whether the game against Dallas plays out any different if the Hawks do beat Philadelphia, and maybe, you know, so maybe the feeling is a little bit different. But just looking at it, it's unfortunate, because we've said this so many times about how the Blackhawks have had difficulty stringing together consecutive wins beyond just two in a row. They've only won back-to-back games just once this season. Every other time the Blackhawks had won, it's been followed up by a loss. And last year, the Hawks only won back-to-back games, I want to say, three times, and they hadn't won more than two games in a row since two seasons ago. So really, really disappointing when you look at this stretch. And heck, you can even kind of rewind before the Florida game. The Hawks were up 2-1 going into the third period against Anaheim. And so if they seal the deal there, you know, the Hawks could potentially be on a five-game winning streak if they end up packaging all those performances in a row and were able to shut the door. Unfortunately, they don't. And now they're 2-1-1 over their last four, and 2-2-1 over their last five. And you look at the last five games, and each of those last five were so winnable outside of the Florida Dallas. And, you know, it is funny too, mentioning on the pregame show how the Blackhawks wins this season: Edmonton, San Jose, Colorado, LA, Anaheim, Minnesota, Florida, Dallas. I mean, they subtract the San Jose and Anaheim wins, because it felt like that the Blackhawks should have won those games. A lot of the Blackhawks wins this season have been against higher quality opponents, and so they play the good teams well. They played Minnesota well today, found themselves up 2-0, and unfortunately just couldn't close the deal. So not the greatest trend if you're a Blackhawks fan, where you score the first goal six times in a row, you hold a two goal lead three games in a row, and not able to finish, you know, some of the deals. And it was unfortunate too, because how big that Dallas win was on Wednesday, scoring six goals, Taylor Hall scoring a hat trick, Connor Bedard ending a 12-game goal drought, Teuvo Teravainen, it was his third goal in like 18 or 19 games, Tyler Bertuzzi recording two assists, Philip Kurashev, who was a healthy scratch for the previous two games before Florida, recording a primary assist on Taylor Hall's first goal 17 seconds into the Dallas game. You figured, wow, a lot of these players for the Blackhawks, their top horse, their big horses, have not been producing to the level of expectation that the organization and themselves have been producing so far this season. And so you thought maybe the Wednesday game would free up the Blackhawks to play a little bit more offensive hockey and try to generate more offense. And they got off to a good start in this game, up 2-0, and unfortunately couldn't seal the deal. And it's kind of like this roller coaster of emotions where you beat the defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers, then you lose on a Saturday afternoon against the Philadelphia Flyers. you put a spanking on the Dallas Stars, who legitimately could win the Stanley Cup this year, or at least come out of the Western Conference, and then struggle to follow that up against the Minnesota Wild, who have been one of the best defensive teams in the NHL this season, especially at 5-on-5. I mean, you go up 2-0 against the Wild, you expect Minnesota to push back, and they did. But it, like as Troy was mentioning, you know, that Taylor Hall giveaway in the offensive zone, it's just an ill-advised decision more than anything, and that ends up being the snowball effect for the Minnesota Wild and reverse for the Chicago Blackhawks, when it's kind of like Chicago gave them the opportunity to get back into the game. It wasn't Minnesota taking control of it themselves. And so just a really disappointing loss for the Blackhawks. And I will also say this, the Minnesota Wild, now in their last 14 games against the Blackhawks, they are 13-0-1. And that one overtime loss came a few weeks ago at the United Center on November 10th when Filip Kurashev scored the overtime winner. And so, man, this was an opportunity too to kind of get a good feeling against the division rival Minnesota Wild that has had Chicago's number of late. The Hawks went into this game with an 0-4-2 record in their last six games in Minnesota. The last win for the Blackhawks in Minnesota, February 2nd, 2019. And just for fun, I ended up looking up the box score. Colin Delia was the winning goaltender in that game for the Blackhawks. This was pre-COVID. Alex DeBrincat had a goal and two assists. Dominic Cahoon, remember him? He had two assists in the game. And then Eric Gustafson also scored twice, including the overtime winner. So that was eons ago that the Blackhawks have beat the Minnesota Wild in Minnesota. Unfortunately, weren't able to capitalize in the last seven games in Minnesota. The Hawks have just 11 goals in seven games. They've given up 24 of them. So the goal differential is minus 13. How about Marc-Andre Fleury? He was a former Blackhawk. He was in between the pipes for this game. I thought he was decent. He doesn't have a single loss in regulation yet this season. His save percentage isn't all that great. So he has been getting some offensive help by the Minnesota Wild. This is his kind of retirement tour. He's been had an unbelievable career. And how about this? I realized this mid-game and I wrote it down. There are six active players in the NHL with three Stanley Cups, and three of those six active players were actually on the ice today. Marc-Andre Fleury's got three, Pat Maroon's got three, and Alec Martinez has three. Of course, he had the couple with LA, and then one with Vegas, and then Pat Maroon, the one with St. Louis, and then back-to-back Stanley Cups with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So a lot of Stanley Cups on the ice for this one. I was asking Troy about Connor Bedard and his confidence. Man, he looked like a different player in this hockey game, or at least started to look like his former self, a guy whose confidence was growing. Man, that 12-game goal drought was really weighing on him, to the point where you would see it and you would feel it and you would hear it in his voice every post game. Even though the Blackhawks had sprinkled in a few wins there, he felt really responsible for a lot of those losses. And in most of those losses, he wasn't really producing much offensively from a shot attempts or shots on goal standpoint. He went back-to-back games in the, was it, I think it was Florida and Philadelphia. Yeah, Florida, Philadelphia, he had zero shots on goal back-to-back games. Philadelphia game, he actually had six shot attempts, but none of them hit the net. He did hit that post early in the game, like 3 minutes into the first period against Philadelphia, was off the post. I think it went off the goaltender's back and just trickled wide. So you wonder if that went in, that could have freed him up. But fortunately, he did end up getting that goal against Dallas on Wednesday night. He stares at the sky like you could feel the monkey off his back. And I definitely feel like that propelled him into today's game, because he finished with seven shot attempts, four of them on goal. Finished with 21:09 of ice time, which I'm doing quick math, I believe. Wow, that actually led all skaters for the Blackhawks. Connor Murphy was next at 21.01. Oh, I'm sorry, Alex Vlasic had 22.59. So Connor Bedard's 21.09 of ice time was second on the team. He also had a secondary assist, but if you go look at the play, it was on Ryan Donato's goal. I mean, just a terrific zone entry. This is Ryan Donato's second goal of the game. A terrific zone entry, ends up giving it over to Alex Vlasic. Ryan Donato shoots it, goes off Brock Faber's stick, and past Marc-Andre Fleury. But there were quite a few instances today where Connor Bedard was creating offensive chances, having some, I don't know how many zone entries, successful zone entries he had today, but it felt like a lot. It felt like he was, I know Darren Pang had said on the broadcast that he's one of the league leaders in zone entry rush attacks. So that I'm not surprised by that because he felt like he was on his game from that regard. And also, there was a picture going around on social media, I think yesterday, about Marc-Andre Fleury, the ages of NHL stars when Marc-Andre Fleury debuted, and Connor Bedard had not been born yet when Marc-Andre Fleury made his debut on October 10th, 2003. Connor was born in 2005, and the reason I say that is because it really looked like Connor Bedard was trying to get a goal on Marc-Andre Fleury today. Like there were a few, he had four shots on goal, and like all four of them were higher quality scoring chances. One of them just hit the top left shoulder of Marc-Andre Fleury. There was another opportunity that did it like trickle by Fleury. I'm not sure, but I remember when Connor Bedard, it was his first preseason game at the United Center against Minnesota, or one of his first preseason games. The game ended up going into a shootout, and Marc-Andre Fleury tripped him after he couldn't get the shootout attempt. I think Connor kind of overplayed himself, and then he tried to go between the legs and kind of pop it over Marc-Andre Fleury, and Fleury tripped him, and it was kind of like a welcome to the NHL moment. And so I wonder how much that was in the back of Connor's mind, wanting to get a goal against Marc-Andre Fleury, one of the greatest of all time, and perhaps the last opportunity that Bedard will get to face Marc-Andre Fleury, as he kind of, this is his last season, and I'm not sure if he'll be the goaltender when the Blackhawks play Minnesota next, or how many games there are left. I think there's either one or two. But yeah, it was nice to see Connor Bedard growing some confidence and feeling more like himself, not just getting an assist and not just the goal on Wednesday night, but actually generating shot attempts and generating some chances for the Blackhawks, because that's where the concern started to be, at least for me. It wasn't really the goal drought. It was the fact that he wasn't really generating shots. Whereas in the beginning of the first half of his goal drought, he was still generating shot attempts, but it really started to dry up midway through and then towards the end of that 12-game goal drought. So it was nice to see Connor find his game again against Dallas, but also today against a very stingy defensive team in the Minnesota Wild. All right, let's take a break here on the Blackhawks post-game show. Still got more to get to, including our save of the game, which is coming up a little bit later, and much more. You're listening to the Blackhawks postgame show on 720 WGN.
Lurie sent it around up the left wing. Foligno, Eric Sinek now to Spurgeon over the Hawk blue line. He shoots, he scores. That's one that Peter Mrazek wants back desperately. This was a shot from way out, and it hit the end of Peter Mrazek's glove and trickled over the goal line into the Hawk net. Spurgeon's second goal of the afternoon gives the Wild a 3-2 lead.
That was what turned out to be the game-winning goal for the Minnesota Wild. Jared Spurgeon, his second of the game and second of the season as well. Some unfortunate breaks on those goals. That goal specifically, man, I cannot remember the last time Peter Mrazek gave up a softie like that. And he'd be the first one to tell you that he has to have that one. Don't know how far that shot was. I forgot to look that up on NHL.com, but I think the broadcast showed like an ice level view of that shot, and it looked like it dipped. Like it looked like a little curveball. Not trying to make any excuses or to find, but I was trying to look closely to see what exactly happened with that puck. And it looked like it was fluttering a little bit. So it wasn't kind of like a saucer where it was just kind of straight into the glove. It looked like it was fluttering on its edge and kind of just dipped in a weird way. And so Mrazek has to have that, no question. But, man, there are not going to be many times this season where we say Mrazek has to be better. Or, I think last year he played in 59 games, which was a career high. Man, I can probably count on my hand the amount of games I left a Peter Mrazek start and was thinking to myself, he wasn't at his best, because typically he's been he's just been rock solid for the Blackhawks. And then on the Jared Spurgeon on the second goal that made it 2-2, 17 seconds after the Marco Rossi goal, the puck goes off Connor Murphy and in. And it feels like Murphy has been a victim of that quite a bit, either this season and even last season. It felt like there were some weird, just fluky plays that went off a Blackhawks defenseman's skate. And so unfortunate to see that, kind of fluky. But again, it all comes down to that Taylor Hall turnover in the offensive zone that kind of led the snowball effect for Minnesota and for Chicago. All right, let's get to the player of the game. We've got a new sponsor here by Burger King. Get your $5 Whopper Junior Duo today. You rule. And easy, got a layup one. Had a layup on Wednesday night. Taylor Hall, hat trick, first one in 11 years, fifth of his career. I thought we might get another one today. Ryan Donato was on hat trick watch early in the second period after scoring his second goal of the game, 5:43 into the second period on the power play, his ninth and 10th of the season. He's now on a 38-goal pace, Ryan Donato is, and his career high is, I believe it's, 16, which was when he was with Seattle in the 21-22 season. 16 goals in 74 games with the Kraken 3 years ago. So now he's got 10 goals through 21 games. So he's just six away from matching his career high for the Chicago with the Chicago Blackhawks. He ended up ending a 5-game goal drought, and I think he had 1 point over that span, and it was an assist in the last game against Dallas. So he had kind of cooled off just a little bit, but it was kind of expected because it felt like the pace that he was on was probably unsustainable. I think he had like 8 goals in the first, 15 or 16 games of the season. And so that's basically a goal every other game. And I don't think anybody expected Donato to continue on a 40-plus goal pace. But nice to see him get back on the score sheet, because again, in the game against Dallas, Taylor Hall, Connor Bedard, Teuvo Teravainen, guys that you expect to produce were the ones producing. And so it was nice to see Ryan Donato get back on the score sheet. They showed it on the broadcast, but Ryan Donato, at one point, he led the NHL in road goals with 9, or it was tied for the NHL lead with 9 road goals of 10. And Sam Reinhart ended up scoring earlier today. I think that game is still going on. And so that was a goal on the road. So now Reinhart is back in front with 10 goals on the road. Ryan Donato just below him at 9. So very weird trend there as well. But sometimes you like those greasy type goals on the road, because at home, you want to get the Connor Bedards and Taylor Halls, you want to get them involved, and they kind of like to put on a show from the home crowd. But nice to see Ryan Donato get back on the score sheet for the Chicago Blackhawks. So tough loss for Chicago. Again, the third consecutive game where the Hawks held a 2-0 lead, and they've only been able to close out the deal in 2 of those 3. They lost against Philadelphia, and then they lost again today. Impressive win against Dallas on Wednesday. Just unfortunate that they weren't able to build on that, because we talked about the roller coaster of emotions. Even Troy was mentioning it in the pregame show, how lively the plane ride was going to Minnesota yesterday. And I know it sounds silly to say, but some of those, it's the little things too, like that, where you want to make sure that it's that coming to the rink is enjoyable, and you could do it with a smile on your face. And if you win, if you win like four in a row, three, four in a row, you start to build some positive momentum, and then it's easier to come to the rink. I remember when they, I can't remember which game it was. I think it was when the Hawks beat Minnesota, and they had a few days in between their next game against Seattle. It was just the practice was livelier. The guys were smiling. Guys were laughing. When you go through the ebbs and flows, the emotions of a win, a loss, a win against a really good team, a loss, beating the defending Stanley Cup champions, losing in overtime against the Philadelphia Flyers, beating smoking a Western Conference potential team in the Dallas Stars 6-2, then losing to Minnesota after holding a 2-0 lead. It's just really unfortunate. And again, it was the sixth straight game the Blackhawks had scored the first goal, and they only have two wins to show for it in those six games after going 5-0-0 in the first five instances where they did score earlier in the season. So you'd like to see the Blackhawks string together some wins. I'm looking at their upcoming schedule. Man, there's a lot of tough opponents on here. They have Columbus on Sunday, then the second of a back-to-back in Toronto on Monday. Then the Boston Bruins, new head coach, new vibes around that team, come to the United Center. Then you got Winnipeg in town next Saturday. Then you have the New York Swing, where they're facing the Rangers, the Islanders, the New Jersey Devils, back home against the Islanders and the Capitals and the Kraken. Then you go to Calgary, face the Flames. You go to Minnesota. You got Dallas, St. Louis. I mean, there are so many higher quality teams that are coming on the schedule. And man, it might not be a bad thing for this Blackhawks team, because it feels like they tend to play up to their opponent. And there's also some the opponent playing down to the Blackhawks. But Connor Murphy had made a comment to me a few days ago after practice, saying, you know, there's almost like a fear of getting run out of the building when you play those upper echelon teams. And so kind of confirmed my theory of that when you the attention to detail is so much higher when you play those elite NHL teams. And so it might not be the worst thing for the Blackhawks to have a string of these games where they're playing against really good teams. It's just unfortunate that, you know, just rewinding to the Anaheim game, you have a 2-1 lead going into the third. That was a winnable game. You beat the defending Stanley Cup champions 3-1. Then you lose to the Flyers 3-2. Beat the Stars. I mean, the Hawks could have easily won. They could easily be on a 5-game winning streak right now if they closed three of those deals of taking a lead into the third period. Two of those three were two-goal leads at some point in the hockey game. And so it's just unfortunate the way things have evolved here with the Blackhawks. And they've been doing it without Seth Jones, which is kind of the most impressive part. They've really locked it down defensively without Seth Jones. Or they've been, I shouldn't say locked it down, like they've been amazing in that department. But they've been very respectable without Seth Jones. And for them to be able to have these good stretches of play over the last five games, all five of those games that have been very, very winnable hockey games, and they've come away with two of five wins, is just unfortunate. And so you'd like to see the Blackhawks find a way to string together some decent performances down the road, and hopefully they can put this one in the rearview mirror quickly and get ready for Columbus on Sunday and then going into Toronto on Monday night. All right, let's get to another break, because we have more to get to on the Blackhawks post-game show, including our save of the game coming up next right here on 720 WGN.
Here's Bertuzzi now to the right wing half boards with the puck. De Vlasic now high slot. Long wrist shot. Oh, and that hit Fleury in the mask. Donato battling for the rebound. Pokes it on goal twice, and it's turned out of there by Fleury. A mad scramble there for a second. Vlasic, a nice keep in left wing side, firing one toward the net. This goes through the crease and pinballs out of the near corner and ends up back down ice in the Hawks zone.
Wow, that was inches away from going in the net.
That was tonight's save of the game, which is sponsored by the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program. Learn more at comed.com/poweringbiz. That was one of 20 saves from Marc-Andre Fleury. Wasn't too tested today against his former team. He only faced four shots on goal in the first period. One of them found the back of the net. He also had that the second Ryan Donato goal went off Brock Faber's sticking in. And so that was you know, nothing really he could do there. Marc-Andre Fleury, by the way, we all know this is his retirement tour, so this is going to be his last season in the NHL. If this is his last start against the Blackhawks, he finishes his career against Chicago with a 14-6-5 record in 25 starts, a 2.54 goals against average, and a .915 save percentage. And by the way, he has never shut out the Blackhawks, so I'm not sure how many teams that he does not have a shutout against. I'm going to look this up on the fly to see how many he has in his career. I know he had that. He's been, 21 seasons in the NHL? So let's see. He's got 75 shutouts in the regular season, and he has 16 in the postseason. So none of those 90-plus shutouts have been against the Chicago Blackhawks. But, man, when he was here in Chicago, he was it's unfortunate we didn't get more time with him, because it feels like he was he had a lot of he's one of the most well-respected players in the NHL, a huge prankster. I remember Mackenzie Entwistle, I was talking to him when he was with Chicago. I did this this 20-question series for the website, and I know Mackenzie Entwistle was, I asked him specifically, one of my 20 questions was, what was the best prank that you've seen or witnessed? And he's like, well, actually, one of them was on me, and it was Marc-Andre Fleury. And he wasn't able to share it publicly, but he kind of told me off the record what it was. Had something to do with the toilet. I know that Marc-Andre Fleury has done that a lot in the past with, you know, kind of change the flusher and it kind of sprays. So Marc-Andre Fleury, he's a funny guy. Wishing him all the best. He had a fun little stint here in Chicago. He had that 500th career win in Montreal, and so that was a fun time for the Blackhawks. So he'll always have that in a Blackhawks sweater. And then Peter Mrazek, we mentioned, he had 27 saves on 30 shots. Man, that third goal, I cannot remember the last time that we were talking about a Peter Mrazek softie. And so I think he'd be the first to tell you should have had that. It's unfortunate that ended up being what turned out to be the game-winning goal for Minnesota, because Mrazek, I'm sure, is kind of going to lose sleep over that one, knowing that he probably should have had that one. Sticking on to the goaltender, the goaltenders really quick, Blackhawks head coach Luke Richardson shut an update before the game on Laurent Brossoit, who he underwent a cleanup procedure on his right knee. This was on Tuesday, and he's expected to be reevaluated in 6 weeks. So he's going to be out for at least another 6 weeks. The Hawks will reevaluate him, and then we'll kind of see what the definitive timeline is beyond that. Brossoit, he initially underwent a successful meniscus surgery on August 27th, and he was originally given a 5 to 7 week recovery timeline. So you figured that would put him on track right around opening day. And over the past month and a half, he had been skating intermittently, kind of just on and off. There was a stretch where we saw him at practice for like a week and a half straight, or I should say before practice. And then he was joining for some of the kind of rotating in and out as the third goalie, so not doing too many drills with the actual practice team. But then over the last, I can't remember the last time I saw him. It's been a couple weeks now, and so you kind of figure there was a potential setback there. And unfortunately, so he's going to miss at least another 6 weeks for the Blackhawks while he kind of sorts his knee out. An interesting wrinkle to all of this in the goaltending situation is Arvid Soderblom's waiver status. So once he hits the 60-game mark, if the Blackhawks want to try sending him to the minors, he's going to have to try to clear waivers. And there's just no way. I don't think Arvid Soderblom would get through, because goaltenders are very coveted in the NHL today, even if it's a young one. I should say, especially if it's a young one, and a guy that has been producing the way he has this season, only one win to show for it in his six starts, but he's got a 2.36 goals against average and a .936 save percentage this season. So I imagine he's going to hit that 60-game mark for sure now that Brossoit is going to miss at least six more weeks. You got a back-to-back coming up Sunday, Monday, Hawks in Chicago against Columbus, then in Toronto on Monday. I imagine Soderblom is going to get the Toronto game just because that was his probably the best game of his career last year at the beginning of the season against Toronto. I think he finished with 40 plus saves. And that, I mean, and that was a terrific performance by Arvid Soderblom. So we'll see what that situation, how that plays itself out. But I imagine that's not a huge concern for the Blackhawks now, knowing that it's probably going to be until at least January where Brossoit returns. And by that point, the situation might be a little different. And heck, we might be even looking at February before Brossoit even appears in a game. So all the best to Brossoit as he kind of recovers. And we'll see how that situation plays itself out. We finally got some sound from the coming from Minnesota. So let's go to Connor Murphy, who spoke to the media after this 3-2 loss to Minnesota.
Just felt like another one was there, slipped away.
Yeah, I feel like it's a shame because we played well for a lot of it leading up to our breakdown in the second. It's unfortunate.
How do you prevent this from being the storyline this season? You guys are in almost every game, and it comes down to a goal here or there.
It's our will to get it done. Attention to detail and just our dig in. I think it's not easy to break through, and that's why where we're at, it's easy to start off the game and have some momentum and when the game's flowing, but it's hard to bear down when things go a little awry. We just have to know that it's going to be hard and not give in like we did and we sometimes do.
What felt like it changed in the second period?
We gave up, it seemed like a combination of some turnovers and just strong on kind of on plays on pucks, whether it's breakouts or their rush coming in our zone. It just, I don't know if I'd say it's something specific as much as it is just momentum and a feeling of going from on your toes to getting on your heels and giving into their momentum shift.
Did it feel, I mean, there's obviously a couple of pucks that, you know, bounce off you or Mraz going through that, I guess those are tough to swallow.
They are, yeah, and it's part of its breakdowns a bit, and then just, yeah, as I said, just those things you can't, you don't even practice situations like that. It's just a buy-in, a dig-in, and it's a focus and something that you just step up in all those plays to try to push it the other way to make it better.
Have you seen a difference in Ryan Donato this year? Scoring?
He's scoring, yeah. His shot seems to be more accurate and aggressive, and I think sometimes you're feeling yourself as a scorer. It'll go in. Some of those tips or blocks off their guys. So that's been going for him, and that's been nice for us to see him capitalize on a lot.
Another one, you guys are obviously in a pretty good position. What changed there in the second?
That was Blackhawks defenseman Connor Murphy. We got one more break to get to, and then we'll wrap up the Blackhawks postgame show after this on 720 WGN. Back here on the Blackhawks postgame show, Ryan Donato scored the only two goals for Chicago in this game, his 9th and 10th goals on the season. Let's hear what he had to say in Minnesota.
I don't know. I mean, I think if we knew it, we would have tried to prevent it, right? It's one of those things that, you know, I feel like we've been playing well the last couple games, and, you know, sometimes the other teams are going to get bounces too, right? Obviously, it's infuriating, and it's hard to lose games and have it be that way, especially when you get off to a good start. But, you know, control what you control, and hopefully we can learn from it and we can continue to say that. But I think at this point, you know, we really, really have to. So
you didn't get the 10 goals last year until March. What do you feel like the difference is this year?
I'm not sure. Just trying to continue to get pucks to the net. I always say, I always go back to my faith, right? I always say it. But for me, that's kind of something I hold true to myself and continue to try and pray every day and, you know, work hard and hopefully good things happen. And, you know, hopefully you can get more wins in that respect too.
That was Blackhawks forward Ryan Donato. Great to see him get off the schneid. 5-game goal drought is over by scoring 2 goals in this one. All right, today's next game preview is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Chicago, where they do it right the first time. Hawks are taking on the Columbus Blue Jackets on Saturday at the United Center, 2 p.m. start. The Blue Jackets, it looks like they're about to take care of business against the Calgary Flames. They would be improving to 5-1-1 over their last 7 games. They were 0-5-1 in their previous 6. Not a great special team. teams team, 21st in power play, tied for 23rd on the penalty kill. Zach Werenski has a goal in this game against Calgary today, extending his point streak to 7 games. He's got 13 points over that stretch. He had a 5-point game last Thursday versus Tampa, which included the overtime winner. So Columbus is coming in pretty hot at the United Center, so Chicago better be ready for them. Blackhawks Hockey is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Chicago, where they do it right the first time. Your Chicago and Northwest Indiana Hyundai dealers, Circa Sports Illinois, United Airlines, and Citgo. When you start with Citgo, you're good to go. Big thanks to all the help we had on the broadcast today, our production crew of Jack Heinrich and Alan Poppy. They were led by our engineer, the Colonel Brett Jackson. For John Weideman and Troy Murray, who brought you the call from Minnesota, I'm Charlie Romeliotis signing off after a 3-2 Blackhawks loss to the Minnesota Wild. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you on Saturday from the UC.